Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
As a promised writer, Richard Dunoy, he is certainly one of my favorite writers. The Big Stick being one of the books that I absolutely loved. Six Fang Marks, also really, really great. Some of them not in English, but really and just an incredible, incredible writer. And I follow him on Twitter. I think he's got a great sense of humor. I get a very, very nice sense of what's going on around the parts of the world that he lives. And then he posted something a little bit unusual last week, and it was round about the time of International Holocaust Memorial Day, which I was quite surprised at what that was. I invited him to join us this morning on the show, and he very kindly accepted. Richard, a very good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Howard. I'm well, thank you.
So, it's after that incredibly long introduction. For our listeners who don't know, you were born in South Africa, right?
No, I wasn't. I was born in the Netherlands, but my folks emigrated when I was four. So we emigrated in 69 and settled in Johannesburg then. And then I went to English schools in Johannesburg, went to Rhodes for 3 years, studied journalism there. And then I was called up to go into the army. And I decided to move back to the Netherlands. So that was 35 years ago.
Oh, wow.
So I've been back in Amsterdam for 35 years now.
Okay, incredible. And your books, for any of our listeners who haven't read them, are an absolute delight. They're wild. I mean, they're just like this roller coaster of madness, which I suppose is I'm sorry, this probably hasn't been described that way before. But either way, that's why I absolutely adore them. What was interesting to me is that you are in the middle of some research around your neighborhood in Amsterdam. Tell us about this.
Well, I live in an area of Amsterdam. I live the road I live in is called the Vierbuurt, or the area I live in, which is, and I live across the road from what is still a synagogue. And this area was really popular among middle-class Jewish people. So the Anne Frank's family lived on the Merwede Plain, which is a five-minute walk around the corner. And there was a large Jewish population living in this area. And so I was working on a book about my mother's war history, and I was very much primed about persecution of the Holocaust and the persecution of Jewish people. And I sort of had an idea that I had pretty good insight into that part of Dutch history and that part of war history and the deportation and murder of the Jewish population in the Netherlands and elsewhere. But as I started reading more and more about it, I realized that what had actually happened had far greater proportions than I'd actually initially realized. So what brought this on was the fact that in our neighborhood they have these stumbling stones, which are memorial plaques, the brass memorial plaques on the ground, in front of houses where people were deported. And I had always sort of thought that these plaques were basically in front of all of the houses where people were deported. But in truth, there's about 100, there's length of the street here. There's maybe a dozen in the street of these little memorial plaques. So, you think, okay, well, that's like a dozen people. But when I started looking, in our street alone, 800 people were deported and murdered from the street alone. And I was so amazed by this that I started reading more about what had actually happened. And I realized that I think about, I hadn't, although I'm fairly well read about stuff, I hadn't realized what the situation was and just exactly how many people had actually been deported. And so I started getting an interest in this. And then what happened is, what I found troubling is the fact that things get stuck in numbers and percentages and how many people were. And what I was interested in was initially was which people had lived in my house, in this house where I live now, which is on the Lekstraat across the road from the synagogue. And then I started working towards the neighbors on either side. And then I gradually sort of, trying to tell their stories, finding information about them online. And one of the interesting things is there's actually a major site which already has, it's called Yotz Monument, which is Jewish monument.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an online site which has all the information about all the addresses. So there's like a Google Street View, and you in each of the houses you can basically see in which house which people lived there, which Jewish people lived there and were deported and were murdered. So there's a lot of information available, but a lot of that information, because many of the families in Amsterdam and in the Netherlands, Jewish families, basically everyone was killed. There aren't people to sort of remember those, always people to remember those families. So there's not always information available about those families. The stories of those families aren't always told. And but I started going in search of information about those families, and there's a site called Delfa, which has all of Dutch newspapers since the late 1800s have been digitized, and you can search through them. So I've been starting to search for personal information about marriages and children, and trying to find information about those families and trying to piece together the histories. And then on top of that, because I thought to myself, okay, many of those histories are ending in a tragic and similar way, and I wanted to really personalize the stories of these people. I've been considering the option of getting Dutch poets to adopt a house, one of the house members or one of the families. I'm not sure which at this point. I haven't sort of started on that part of the project yet because I'm still gathering the information. But I'd like them to write a poem about and basically adopt a family and then write a poem honoring that family or remembering them or telling their story. And that would, to my mind, give a more sort of positive impulse to the situation that it is now, which is basically just these little plaques on the ground which have the names of these people and where they were killed, but nothing about their lives and what kind of people they were. So what I'm hoping to do with this project is not only to tell their stories, but to add a sort of an artistic and modern dimension in which you're actually honoring these people and in a certain sense contributing to their history. That's the plan at this point.
Absolutely incredible, because really what it does is personalize it. And as you said before, as you said earlier, is the numbers actually stop meaning anything. We can't conceptualize numbers because numbers are by nature impersonal. It's only when you start looking at the family, an individual family. And I love the fact that it started off in your own house. Well, actually, as a combination of things, it started off with research into your mother's war, into your own family history. Then it starts in your house, and it just starts working outwards. It's such an interesting way of tackling it.
Well, I think one of the things is that it's sort of the fact that I was researching my mother's stories is that. It opens up and you start reading widely and you get more of an insight into the situation. And what I found happening is that in the Jewish community, I was finding information about. Can I briefly explain what my mother's book is about?
Yeah, I was going to ask you if you don't mind. What was your mother's war?
Okay, well, my mother was grew up in Amsterdam. And she finished high school in 1942, in the summer of 1942. And by that time, the Netherlands was occupied. And she almost directly in that summer, she went to work at a psychiatric institution as a trainee nurse out in the countryside, in the Dutch countryside. And the psychiatric institution was for women with all sorts of psychiatric problems, but also for wayward girls. So it was like a rehabilitation institute.
Right.
And these wayward girls were juvenile prostitutes who stayed there until they were like 20, 21, and then were sort of reintroduced into society sort of thing, or were released, as it were. But many of these girls had also had been in relationships with, obviously, with Germans by that time, or fallen pregnant, and there were also... girls from well-to-do families who basically sat out their pregnancies at Zwaluwenberg, as this place is called. And so this was just, in the middle of the countryside, this was this institution. But there were also Jewish people hiding at the institution. And because I was trying to, because my mother in her stories talks about these people who are hiding there. And so I tried to basically to track these people down. And I managed to find, it was actually one of the men who was hiding there, wrote a diary, which was a fantastic diary. And I got the diary from his son, and that's now been incorporated into the story. And then I discovered that two of the young Jewish boys who had been hiding there as well, one of them had written a book about the Zwarenburg and the time that they'd been hiding there. And he was 5 or 6 at the time. So they'd pieced together bits of his memory and his brother's memory to write this sort of fictionalized account, basically. But I was finding more and more and more information. So I was sort of digging into this, into the war history. And what I was discovering is that when you start looking for people and trying to identify people who aren't identified in stories, what you do is you bring the dead to life and you start tracking and you try to talk to families and you, and what happened, what I noticed is that, which is logical. You approach people and you ask, about their kin who have been killed in the war, and you immediately get into a really deep level of conversation with people about the history of their family and what happened. And but not all of that information can be incorporated into the book. But you approach it as if that family may be the right person, or you're trying to identify someone or identify someone who is hiding there. So you get into these really intense conversations with people, but you can't put all of those stories into the book. And then when this, when I discovered this about the Lechstraat and how many people have been deported here, I thought, well, maybe I can approach this in a different way and just in my own vicinity, because, obviously a lot more people were, more than 104,000 Jewish people were deported and murdered from the Netherlands alone. Yeah. And from this neighborhood alone, that was, there were many, many more. So, this is, if I were to go on doing this in the neighborhood, okay, not only for the street, it would take, it could be the rest of my life, and it would have to be taken over by others. And,
right.
And so that's the situation as it stands. So,
what's interesting as well, Richard, is well, a couple of things that we unfortunately only have 5 more minutes. But what I found interesting is that there's a lot of ambivalence now around the role of Holland in the Holocaust and the way in which people behaved, the regular Dutch person. Some of them, of course, the people were hidden, but there was also this there were also many stories of people being given up, and it's not just by neighbors reported on, and of course it's not just the Anne Frank story. I can't recall, I've just finished a book and I don't know if it was called The Paper Dolls, very interesting. I'll think of what it was called, and you left feeling very, I was left feeling very almost confused around, obviously there's never a collective response. Individuals respond and then we look back in history and we try and figure out what that was. But it certainly wasn't a simple relationship between Jews and their neighbors at the time.
No. I think, the thing is that I was just, I was reading up about it just to check the facts. The Netherlands is different. Netherlands is often sort of, as compared to Belgium and France in terms of the number of people deported and murdered. So, the Jewish community in the Netherlands, 75% of that community were deported. So I'm getting back into figures here, which I don't want to.
Okay. But it's important
in Belgium,
for context.
In Belgium, those figures were I think a quarter of the population, the Jewish population in Belgium, and a third in France. But the major difference is that in the Netherlands, 85% of that Jewish population had been here for centuries. So they were fully integrated into the Netherlands. They were part of the Dutch, they were certainly part of Amsterdam in a really big way, but also many of the other harbor towns and industrial centers and that sort of thing, where there were synagogues and Jewish communities surrounding those synagogues, and there was basically a Jewish life going on, as it were. Whereas in Belgium and France, in Belgium, 90% of the Jewish population there had arrived there as immigrants from Eastern Europe, so pretty recently, sort of during the beginning of the 1900s, and and in France it was, I think, 50%. So, and the influx of refugees in the Netherlands was different. So what happened was that in the Netherlands, the Jewish community were actually approached to ask them to help solve this refugee problem, which was basically started by the Nazis coming into power and people leaving. And whereas in the other countries, a lot of these refugees basically arrived and they were a new sort of problem that had to be solved by everyone. And in the Netherlands, the Jewish community, basically what was decided, they after the Kristallnacht in Germany in the 1930s, they actually closed the borders of the Netherlands, and then they set up a camp called Westerbork, which made, you know, it ended up being a transit camp during the war, during the deportation. But that was built as a refugee camp by the Dutch government and funded by the Jewish community.
Incredible.
And it was actually also run for a long time by the,
Jewish community.
So people were, the Jewish community in the Netherlands were obviously, I think, far more, they were involved in trying to save their own people, and they, and which sort of they maneuvered into a more difficult position. And also, you can also imagine if you've lived in a country for centuries and you've built up your life and your businesses, and so people were more inclined to stay in the Netherlands and to see, you know, see how things turned out.
Yeah.
Whereas in other countries, people moved on and went straight to ports basically and started heading off to America, and in the Netherlands that you get a lot of people arriving as well because you've got major harbors in Rotterdam, so
right,
there's a lot
of course,
people that constant influx.
Yes.
So this became the tragic thing is, if you read up about the differences, the Anne Frank organization has an interesting story about the percentages and the different ways, the way the Jewish communities and things were run in the Netherlands, Belgium, and France. That's an interesting story to read.
Absolutely, Richard.
It gives you sort of initial insights. Yeah.
Unfortunately, we actually are out of time. But before I let you go, I just need to ask you one question. And that is, as a non-Jewish person involved in this, doing, I think, unbelievably important work, do you ever feel uncomfortable about that? That you're writing from outside versus inside. I think you shouldn't feel uncomfortable. Just to clarify, I think it's phenomenal what you're doing. But I just wanted your feelings quickly.
Well, I think the difficult thing is, the most difficult thing is basically, talking about it, because writing is easier because I'll write the stories and then I'll get it edited and checked, and I check a lot of the backstory with Jewish community and with also with the diary I was working on, and the way I handle that, I get all of that information checked as much as possible, and I take that on board and I incorporate that into the story. And I've had so much support also from Jewish people giving
Incredible.
Me their background stories and their stories and understanding that I feel more and more confident that that I can tell the story, and that it's also important that I do tell the story, because I think one of the reasons I'm doing this also is because I noticed that my own children have less of a connection with the war and what happened and the circumstances as they are now,
absolutely,
compared to then. So I'm trying to sort of teach them as well. So in a sense, I'm writing this book for my children and their future generations as well.
Absolutely fantastic. Richard Dinoy, thank you for taking the time to speak to us, and thank you for the incredible work that you are doing. I'm certainly going to keep in touch with you and keep our listeners informed as to how this is going. I really appreciate you speaking to us. That's writer Richard Dinoy talking about the documentation of the lives of more than 800 Jewish neighbors who were deported and murdered.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.